Katie Milner is one determined racing driver. The McLaren Driver Development Program member started driving at the age of just 6, and has been a rapid rise ever since then. She was the inaugural winner of the British Women Racing Drivers Gold Star Award, and the first female junior saloon car champion in 2016. And her place on McLaren's DDP was set to be the start of a promising 2020. Then COVID happened, and it was all postponed. But now, in 2021, Katie is ready to get back on the grid. And on March the 1st, it was announced she would be racing with Team Rocket RJN in the British GT Championship. On this episode, Katie joins us to talk all about her hopes for 2021, after last year's disruption, as well as the influence of her dad, Johnny, himself a highly successful rally driver. We also talk about being a woman in motorsport and what comes with constantly being asked about that. Ultimately, if you have the talent, gender really shouldn't matter. Katie, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on the show, of course, in a week that has been quite busy, really, with announcements. But how is everything in the grand scheme of things? Quite busy, I imagine.
Yeah, it's definitely starting to pick up now that we've announced that we're going to be with Rocket RJN this year. Things are sort of been a bit quiet for a while. Obviously, we didn't actually compete last year, so the DDP program was kind of moved on to this year, which kind of gave us a proper season. The season last year was sort of compressed, and it was pretty much meeting after meeting and not much time in between to train. And my teammates as well, they kind of from all over the world, so it was difficult for them to be living in the UK. Announcing that we're going to be back in the championship this year, and it's, you know, the date's looking good, so hopefully, fingers crossed, we're going to be good to get going in at the end of May.
Shall we kick off then with the announcement that you've touched on? For those who are unaware, it was only on Monday, so March the 1st, that it was actually announced that you'd be racing for Team Rocket in the British GT Championship. How does it feel to, I suppose, actually get back out there and to get racing again after, like you say, so long kind of itching to get back out?
Yeah, it's nice to have a sort of a goal to sort of aim to. You know, I found it a bit difficult in lockdown, when we sort of didn't know what we were doing, and then when it got sort of deferred for a year, I found it a little bit difficult to motivate myself, because it was like, oh, we're not going to be out for a year, so what sort of training do I need to be doing? So I just kind of kept on top of my fitness, did as much sim work as I could. That's kind of picking up now at the moment. We're doing assessments all the time with iZone. I'm looking forward to getting back out. I'm not sure when it's going to be, but hopefully within the next couple of months. We can start and get ready for the end of May.
You say there it was tough to motivate yourself. How did you motivate yourself in the end?
I think just because there's four of us on the programme, you're always kind of seeing what everyone else is doing. And, literally we get analysed on a lot of things, and we all can see if, you know, someone's been on a 10K run and how quick they've done it. So you kind of look at that and think, right, I need to go do that now and try, get quicker than them. So I just kind of started looking at what everyone else was doing and trying to, go quicker in a run, or, even like on the sim, if they were doing an hour's running every day, I'd do an hour and a half, and, just try and get that little bit ahead of them. So yeah, I think that was kind of the main way that I could keep myself motivated, and then and knowing that this year was going to sort of be our year to get out there, and yeah, just keep training really.
That's another perfect example of that, I suppose, competitive element within your team working quite well in your favour. How did it all come about? Because in terms of the partnership between those at McLaren and the team, it looks to be a very promising partnership.
Yeah, well, the team ran two McLarens last year in British GT, but in the GT3 category. And I know they have run a GT4 in the past. So, I think the experience of the team will be great for us. None of us have raced in the championship before, so at least they've got that behind them, so they can kind of get us on track as quick as possible. I know that they're doing quite a few bits with McLaren as well, which is good, and it kind of gives us a bit of a ladder to progress, hopefully after doing GT4 with them.
Definitely. For those who are not in the know, of which there'll probably be a few listening to this podcast because we cover so many sports, how do you describe sort of the British GT Championship in terms of, you know, what is expected of you, what the setup is like, what the championship is like as a whole, and just how much training and work goes into performing when that first race starts on May 22nd, I think?
Yeah. So it's kind of the next step up really in motorsport, from sort of almost club events and, you know, the people that are kind of doing it for fun. The British GT Championship is every racer pretty much is out there to try and, you know, start the ladder on their career to become a professional driver. So the championships run with two categories, so GT4, which is what I'll be racing in, and then you can progress into the GT3. So basically when we start the race, it's a rolling start. The GT3 start in front of us and we're probably about 10 seconds behind in the GT4. So it's a good championship to kind of get your head around in the first year in GT4, and then there's progression into GT3 after that. And it's a big step up from what I've been doing, especially I've only ever really done sprint races. So, you know, standing starts and then a race for 20 or 30 minutes. Whereas this is endurance and you're out there with, you come in halfway and then your teammate gets in and it's all, you know, you're both going for the same result in the same car. It's kind of either 2 1-hour races or 1 2-hour race or Silverstone's 3-hour race. So it's going to be quite different to what I'm used to. But, you know, definitely looking forward to the challenge.
When do you feel ready to take that next step up, which for you this is?
I think sort of once I feel like I've almost conquered what I'm doing, so like once I've sort of feel like I'm at the top of the game in GT4, I think that's then the time to move on to GT3. I never really wanted to leave anything where I've felt like I've not driven something to the best of my ability. I did GT5 for 3 years just because there was so much to learn. It was completely different to what I did in the championship before. So yeah, I think once I'm kind of at the top of that championship, then it's time to move on.
And you've alluded to this already as well with what's happened obviously last year with lockdown and the world becoming this crazy alternate version of the world that we had before, if you want to describe it that way. And I suppose the postponement of the development program too for that year. How difficult is it to keep that drive going, wanting to conquer the next challenge, wanting to do the next thing when you've got such a large gap with a little bit of an element of uncertainty like we all have at the moment?
It was quite difficult for all four of us. I think it was it was amazing to find out that we were on the program to start with, and then everything sort of started to to kick off, and you know, the announcement came out and we were all down at Silverstone training together. Harry and Michael had moved over and were living in the UK, and then I think, well, the whole country, we didn't really know what we were doing, so they ended up going back to their own countries, and then we were kind of in a bit of a limbo. And yeah, I think we were hoping to still run in the championship, even though it was going to be later on in the season. But then McLaren sort of said, you know, it's going to be compressed, it's going to be difficult. You know, families aren't really going to be able to come and watch, which is always nice. So yeah, it was just going to be a difficult season. So that's kind of why they deferred it for a year. But yeah, we've all kept in contact. We're still being training together pretty much every week, even, you know, since sort of this time last year. So we've all been able to sort of motivate each other, I think.
Did you learn anything about yourself in that time, or improve on anything with regards to yourself in that time? Because again, it varies from different people that we've been talking to recently.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of the training that we've done, we do it as a four, so we can sort of watch each other and see what each other are doing and how you know, one driver drives completely different to another driver. And I mean, two of the guys that are on the program have already raced the car for a year, so it's really interesting to watch them, because they've got, you know, another year's experience in the car compared to what me and Harry have got. So yeah, I've definitely learned to kind of be a little bit more selfish and you know, kind of put my training first rather than, you know, other things. Definitely learned, you know, to be a bit more resilient, and yeah, just kind of put it first rather than a lot of other things, really.
I suppose making those necessary sacrifices that often get made to put, like you say, your sporting career first. Being a part of McLaren as well, obviously a huge opportunity, being part of the programme. What do you think is the biggest difference in you now compared to when you first got involved with McLaren? Which is a very big question.
Yeah. I think I do have to keep sort of reminding myself the position that I'm in. You know, this is, and really this is only the start of my career, hopefully, you know, a long career with McLaren. So it's really, you know, all about sort of them first impressions and trying to be the best that I can be now, to hopefully, you know, carry on with them in years to come.
Moving on then to kind of influences you've had throughout your career and your life, and I'm pretty sure I know where this is going because I saw a similar answer in another piece that you did, with regards to your dad and what your dad obviously achieved in motorsport too. Is he essentially your biggest idol for where you are now?
Yeah, definitely. I kind of, growing up and watching him, I've seen motorsport from every single angle. Even before, you know, I got into it, I think my dad was quite unique because he didn't kind of run with a team. He literally did everything himself, built the car, you know, mechanicked on the rallies for himself, you know, kind of funded it himself as well. So managed to do it a little bit cheaper than, you know, running with a proper team, but, you know, still went out there and finished on the top step. So, yeah, definitely. It's, you know, and I still live with him now, and, you know, if I'm ever in a, you know, got a problem or whatever, I can kind of go to him and say, look, Dad, what do I do? So yeah, he's definitely, you know, well, he ran my car pretty much the last sort of 6-7 years, ever since I started, from the age of 12. So yeah, I've kind of grew up a little bit different to sort of most carters that have come up through the ranks. But yeah, he's definitely the person that I look up to.
What's the, I suppose, the kind of relationship like between you? I often, when I'm thinking about sort of athletes whose parents were involved in a sport or a similar sport to their kids, and I'm always interested in the dynamic. I liken it to what I always think of Peter Schmeichel and Kasper Schmeichel, the footballers, because Peter Schmeichel, Kasper's dad, has always said he doesn't want to ever give any feedback, any advice, any coaching to his son, because he's always of the mind that I'll just want to be his dad and that's it. So I don't know if that's ever a balance that needs to be struck when you're in that similar sort of position, when you've got a parent who also did sport, and whether that's something you and your dad have sort of gotten better at as the years have gone on, or if that's something that's ever been considered.
I think it's been quite a bit different for us, especially with my dad sort of running the team pretty much up to when I've started with McLaren. So, I mean, there has been quite a few arguments when things aren't quite going right, or if I come in and say something was wrong with my car. But I think with me being a girl, rather, you know, sometimes when it's dad and lad, things can get much more heated. Whereas I think, like, when I've had driver coaches in the past, they've sort of said, compared to guys, girls listen more and adapt, and I'd be able to, you know, if they say, right, next lap you need to brake later here or whatever, the girl can normally do it straight away, whereas the guy kind of you know, takes a while to almost compute it. So I think I'm just a lot more, he has said to me now, you know, that's it, I'm kind of on my own a little bit. He says he's done his work and you know, got me to where I wanted to be. So it's going to be nice this year, I think, because he's going to turn up and be a parent, you know, rather than a mechanic for his daughter, and he can actually sort of sit on the sidelines and watch. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what our relationship's like this year.
I imagine he's looking forward to that as well, getting to be the parent and the fan.
I think so, yeah. I think there'll be a lot of pacing up and down when he's watching me, but I think he'll definitely, he knows to sort of stand back now and let me get on with it. So yeah.
What would you say is the biggest thing he's taught you? Another big question.
Probably to never give up, really. We have a little MX-5 here that we do auto testing. And you know, some weekends we'll think, right, let's get it out and let's have a bit of a challenge, and we'll just go head to head with each other. And sometimes he'll go out and then he'll do three runs and I'll do three runs, and if I'm like a tenth off him, that means I'll keep going until I beat him, and vice versa. If, you know, if I'm a tenth quicker than him, he'll keep going until he's beating me again. So I think to sort of never really settle for, you know, always try and push for more, I think.
Which must have been very useful, considering the conversation we just had about lockdown and, like I say, never giving up when things get tough. This is something I've seen you mention as well, about sort of the dream being the first female winner of Le Mans. And is that very much sort of, as much as we talked about conquering one thing and then going on to the next thing and conquering that, is that very much the end goal for you, that you see your kind of your career progression is going towards?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think anyone can really know what path they're going to take. I was supposed to go the same route as my dad and go rallying, but, you know, my path kind of changed and now I'm here. So it would be nice to make history like that, but I guess it depends on what opportunities come up. I don't know, really.
In terms of the pathway and not going down the rallying route, was there a reason that it did go down a different road?
I started in autocross racing, which is kind of like, I think you do about four laps around, pretty much in a field. It's just an oval. And I started doing that, and I finished second in the British Championships and the National Championships. And there used to be well over sort of 150 juniors that would enter. So there was a lot of competition, a lot of heats that you had to go through to get to the final eight. And then I kind of got to the point where I'd sort of set off and shoot into the lead and kind of win, you know, most races. So we thought, right, well, it's about time to move on now. So the route that my dad took was then he went to Rallycross. So we looked at Rallycross, and the age that I was still a junior. And at that time, there was only three cars on the grid in the junior category, whereas looking at circuit racing, there was 20 or more. So it was really just the facts of the competition. You know, we kind of looked at it and said, well, I'm not really going to learn a lot racing against three people. Whereas, you know, I'm going to kind of be battered around a little bit and have to learn a lot more racing on a circuit against 20 people. So that was the only reason, really. You know, if the competition was there in Rallycross, I probably would have done it. But yeah, it was just what it was like at that time.
Mm-hmm, definitely. This podcast then is obviously kind of about, well, it puts a big emphasis on women's sport. And it's one of the reasons we were set up in the first place, just to give it a bit more of a platform. And as a woman in motorsport, I imagine this is the question that everyone fires at you in every single interview is, you know, what's it like to be a woman in motorsport? And we've had Emily Glanville on this podcast before, who's talked a lot about the same sorts of reasons. But to kind of flip it on its head a little bit, does it get not so much annoying, but maybe repetitive, always being asked about being the woman in motorsport?
Yeah, I think I think the media tend to play on it a lot more and make it out that it is a problem when it's not a problem. I mean, going back to my autocross days, you know, out of 150 cars, there was probably a good 40 cars that had a female driving them. So, you know, it was never really seen as a problem. You know, there wasn't as many, but there was still a good amount, and, you know, a few, you know, fairly very good female drivers. So there wasn't really any talk of it when I was racing in autocross. And then sort of the first year I did JSCC, so moving to circuit racing, I was the only girl. And then the second year, there was three of us, including Emily Glanville. And it never really was a problem then until I kind of moved to senior racing. And the media kind of got a bit more involved and started asking these questions. So, yeah, it's never really fazed me. I get asked about it all the time, but I always kind of say, you know, we all look the same when we've got our helmet and overalls on. So, you know, we should all sort of be classed as racing drivers.
Yeah. Is it almost the sort of the higher up you go, the more intense the questions are? Because I suppose it comes down to, again, the focus. Everyone sees, you know, F1 and almost thinks that's reflective of the whole sport rather than actually digging deeper, like you say, to the autocross level.
Yeah, I think because Formula One's kind of seen as the pinnacle of motorsport, and there's no females in there at the moment anyway. I think people kind of see it as an issue, and they think that there's no females in motorsport at all. But kind of the ranks sort of above below F1, I think there's only one girl racing in F3. So I think kind of the higher up, and you know, the harder that the championships get, you know, it does sort of thin everyone out, and you know, only the best are able to race in it. Whereas if you kind of look at grassroots, like in autocross, you would kind of have mum, dad and children all racing in the same car, and they had men's and ladies and then juniors. So yeah, there's definitely a lot more women grassroots level, and I do think that there is a bit of an issue for sort of backing and funding towards females, but yeah, I think it's just time that someone has really got to prove himself and get to the top.
Yeah, and that's very similar to what Emily said, specifically on the funding and backing side of things, because that is a major player, isn't it, into whether you can take that next step. One thing I've often asked as well to athletes who are in a similar position, Alice Deering, the open water swimmer, is one I use as an example, because she's a black swimmer. So every single time she's asked about being the black swimmer, whereas a lot of people in that position, you're just a swimmer. And you don't have to deal with all, you can just kind of focus when it comes to interview, performance, whatever, you can just focus on your performance and being a swimmer. Whereas someone like Alice would have to then also be a spokesperson, per se, at the same time. Is that something you've had to learn to deal with as well, just by the fact that you happen to be a woman in motorsport, that you've got to grasp being this kind of spokesperson for women's sport at the same time, when perhaps other people your rage coming through the ranks maybe don't have to do that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I felt in the past like I've kind of had to prove myself as a good driver before people stop asking about me being a girl in the sport. I remember when I was when I first went into circuit racing and I was racing in juniors, you could tell that, you know, the other kids would purposely sort of turn in and try and make me crash because I was a girl. And then it took a little bit of time, you know, a few races, to realize, you know, she's actually quite good, let's, you know, actually race with her. And then I slowly got to the front. And I think kind of it's difficult entering a new championship when people don't know your background. So yeah, sometimes I feel like the first couple of races are quite difficult because you've got to prove yourself first, that, you know, you're there to win. You're not just to sort of make up the numbers.
That kind of brings me on to the social media side of things. And I kind of make it a big talking point because of, I suppose, more so of the racist abuse that we're kind of seeing in the headlines a lot of the time at the moment. But working in journalism myself and seeing, you know, what some of my team get sent to them on a daily basis. And it does kind of often get flagged up as, while it can have so much positivity to it, there's this whole other flip side as well. What's your kind of attitude to social media / using it? Because it's one of those where we speak to some athletes and they just like to leave it alone, particularly when there's a competition coming or they're in the middle of the competition. Or whether it's something you like to get involved with, but there's also this other side that comes to it that you kind of have to deal with, and whether that, I suppose, for your perspective, the possible sexism side of it, which often does come with women's sport on social media, and whether that's something you just have to kind of deal with or learn to cope with.
Yeah, I mean, I've not really experienced a lot of kind of hate comments or anything like that. I mean, I've seen a couple that you know, just kind of throw away comments, and you just kind of don't really let them affect you. I've always used social media but purely for the fact that we've, you know, in the past we've had to have sponsorships to go racing, so it's so important if you've got a sponsor that, you know, you've signed a contract with, and you have to promote them through Instagram, Facebook, everything. So I've always used it, and I feel like you've kind of got to play on the fact a little bit that being a girl is seen as a little bit different and a, you know, a bit diverse compared to, you know, what a lot of people normally see motorsport as. So definitely try and use it to my advantage, but kind of not really, you know, rub it in people's faces too much. But yeah, the main reason I use it is purely for sponsorship, to, you know, to fund what I'm doing.
This podcast is a member of The Bear, internet radio and podcast network. Find more great podcasts at thebear.live.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the players' podcast.
Do you feel like a role model to people? Because you probably are to a lot.
I didn't until I kind of, kind of started coming up the ranks. And I'm involved in a club called BWRDC, which is the British Women Racing Drivers Club. And it's sort of targeted more at grassroots racers. And I've been to like all the awards dinners and everything. And it's so kind of, it's a bit surreal really when people come up to you and, you know, congratulate you and say, you know, I want to do what you're doing one day and sort of follow, you know, do this, take the same steps. And I hope I can be in your position in 5 years time or, you know, something like that, which is quite weird because I still feel like I'm almost not at the bottom of my career, but, you know, kind of, on like just starting. I definitely I notice it more now than what I did. So I kind of do try and help people that are looking to get into the sport, especially girls, and try and give them a help really into it.
Yeah, and that I suppose points to the positive side of social media as well, doesn't it? And that it gives you a platform to reach out to people who might not normally see it on standard rolling news and things like that. How important is it as well being the first female on the driver's development program? Because again, this comes into you sort of being a role model for others, and you know, to be the first, you know, that barrier kind of has been broken down now, and you've showed others that you can do it.
It's a huge opportunity for the four of us, but you know, to be the first girl, hopefully, it's a little bit of a breakthrough in the whole racing world really. It's going to be quite interesting racing this year and kind of having spectators back and seeing what the atmosphere's like, but I just need to kind of prove myself that, you know, I'm as good if not better than the other four, the other three that are on the program this year, and sort of hope to keep progressing with McLaren.
Moving on to my final part then, and it's very much about kind of looking ahead at the future, and I suppose in the immediate future, what happens now with regards to your training between, I suppose, today versus, you know, when you finally get to go back out for that first race? Because I imagine there's still a lot of preparation, training and all sorts of things to get back up to speed.
Yeah, so my training's stepped up quite a bit actually over the last sort of month. I've actually taken on a challenge for breast cancer to cycle 300 kilometres over the month of March. So I did my first one yesterday and my legs are aching.
I was going to say, how was that?
Yeah. But after this, I'm going to go back out and get some more kilometres in. I'm training, getting my endurance back up to speed. I'm on the sim every day now. We have training sessions every Tuesday with iZone and then assessments every Friday. So that's kind of really motivating us all, because we all do, all four of us do the same assessment on the Friday. And then you can see what everyone's times are. So we all get quite competitive with that. When the guys come back over in April, I guess everything, hopefully, you know, we can go and train together in the gym and on the sim, actually in person. Get back on track, hopefully, end of April.
And with regards to getting back on the track? Is it a case where you set yourself targets, you set yourself ambitions, or is it the age old take each day as it comes, see how you feel sort of thing?
Well, we only have a limited amount of days before we actually start racing. So it's kind of all about being as prepared as possible for each one of those test days. We basically can't waste any of them. We've got to take as much as we can and make them as valuable as possible. I think it's just making sure that we're training enough before those test days to kind of take the maximum away from them, just be as ready as we can be for the start of the season.
And I've listed a few of your achievements as well, for the sake of this podcast. Be it first female junior saloon car champion, that was in 2016, the inaugural winner of the British Women Racing Drivers Gold Star Award, and of course, obviously, what you're doing with McLaren. If you can kind of fast forward to whether it's 5 years' time, 10 years' time, what would you have liked to add to that? Or where do you see yourself, rather, in sort of 5 years, 10 years' time?
I'd definitely like to carry on, sort of progressing up the ladder with McLaren. So it would be nice to go abroad, do some European championships. I've only ever raced at Spa and Zandvoort outside of the UK. So it would be nice to sort of progress and do some different tracks and do some different championships and kind of, go up to more difficult championships. The aim this year is to go out and try to win the GT4 championship with Harry. And then I'm not sure where it'll sort of take us after that, but it'd be nice to progress into GT3. The goal is to become a pro driver and sort of race in the top GT championships across the world. So, yeah, it would be nice to have a few more championships under my name within the next sort of 5 years. And hopefully progress to someday race at Le Mans.
Yeah, and I think everyone would love to see that happen. And hopefully the global pandemic has ended by that point. So fingers crossed.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. My last one then is, obviously you touched on a few of those achievements, but is there a particular highlight for you that stands out already? I know you've mentioned that it's still very much the beginning for you, but there's already so much to be proud of there. I don't know if there's a particular highlight that you've had or have experienced so far and maybe want a little bit more of.
I think definitely the highlight was winning the junior championship back in 2016. I don't think anyone who's won a championship before will know the feeling that you get when you cross the line knowing that you've won, you've beaten every other driver on the grid. I definitely like to get that feeling again, over the next few years. But my other sort of biggest achievement is, to even get onto the shootout for McLaren. So 18 of us got invited to a 2-day shootout where we put through so many tests. And then it was a horrible sort of 3 or 4 week wait before we found out he was on the programme. And I always say, to even get invited and have the chance to be on the shootout, was amazing. But then to actually get on the programme, it's what most, young up and coming drivers sort of dream of. So, I'm very grateful and really looking forward to hopefully getting going in May.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say you probably waited long enough for... throughout this entire last year for this opportunity to finally to get going, essentially. And like I said, there's been a lot of disruption for the last few years. Well, last few years, last, it feels like a few years, last year. But like I say, it would be great to see what you go on and do. And there's definitely so much determination there. And also, as you mentioned, if you follow the old adage of your dad, never giving up, then there's a lot to come. So thank you so much, Katie, for coming onto the podcast, telling us about your journey so far, the journey that I'm sure is to come as well. And we wish you all the very best of luck, and also with that grueling cycle ride, because it sounds tough on the legs.
Cool. Thank you very much.
A huge thank you to Katie and to McLaren for taking part in this interview. We wish her all the best when the championship gets underway, and we definitely back her to make it all the way to Le Mans at some stage. Some quick messages before we bring this particular episode to an end. As ever, please spread the word if you enjoyed the podcast. We are on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter. All of our handles are SportSpielPod. And if you want to get in touch with us, please email sportsbuildpod@gmail.com. You can also find all our past episodes, little bits about us, on our website. It is sportsbuildonline.com. Another big shout out as well to our radio partners, The Bear. You can find out all about them in the link in the show notes, and you can hear us on the radio station every Monday night at 10 p.m. That is it for this particular episode of Sportspiel. Take care, everyone, as ever. The light at the end of that lockdown tunnel gets closer with every passing day. We will be back very soon with another new episode. Bye-bye, everyone, until then.